This is the Empower Podcast, recorded August 17th, 2016, episode 312, Aussie Bound.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Who is in New York at the moment.
Buffalo, New York, yes.
Buffalo, oh, sorry. Is it important to recognize Buffalo as a...
Well, if you knew your New York geography, New York is actually a decently sized place. And
yeah.
If you most people think, oh, New York City, how often do you go there, like when you were growing up? And it's like a 7-hour drive, so
yeah, which is New York City being Manhattan,
right? That's like the exact opposite side of New York State. So yeah, I'm on the far west side. That's like okay. Dave. How often are you hanging out in Perth these days? Well, not quite. The
not
distance
quite.
Is way different, but yeah, you know what I mean.
Right.
Like it's just the relative. Yep.
Okay.
Anywho,
I could be like it's like saying I'm in Dubbo or somewhere or
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. You have no idea where Dubbo is. Trust me, it's about, you know, a few hundred kilometers out.
There we go. Yeah, that works for me. I trust you.
All right.
Maps and stuff.
So we have new. Mm. We have two news items, personal news items.
Yeah.
This week, start with yours.
Well, I should start learning some geography, I suppose, of Australia.
And you better start overcoming your fear of snakes and drop ears and
you and yeah, I will be I am currently planning to go to Australia April of 2017, almost all, well, not the whole month, but the last 3 weeks of April I will be visiting. Me and Dave will finally shake hands and promptly get in a fist fight.
Yep. not planning. You actually have tickets.
Oh, yeah, I have tickets, yeah.
Free, of course, using your bazillion frequent flyer miles that you've racked up.
Yes, traveling has a little bit of a benefit for that, so I will be...
Right.
I'll be heading down there. So what we need from our audience, though, obviously, a couple of things. One is, obviously, we have a lot of Aussie listeners. I would love to finally meet all of you. Dave probably knows some of you, but I'm sure there's others hiding throughout the countryside, and I'd love to meet you, and you know, we'll have some meetups and stuff like that. And
for sure
we need activity suggestions too, because you and I had talked a little bit about maybe doing a road trip somewhere, something like that,
but we have no idea where.
No idea where. So, and I'm
preferably
not going to be
like with a tech related target, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, like not just all right, let's drive to Uluru and see the big rock in the center of Australia. You know, like I think we need
really... I mean, that is definitely a thing, but I don't really. I don't know. I'm not super touristy.
We could have done like the solar challenge thing, you know, which goes right down the middle of Australia, the world's
what
biggest solar. The solar race, the solar car race thing. But I think that's more towards the end of each year, I think.
Oh, it's not like we would do the racing. It's like you go watch the
race. Oh, no. Well, that's another thing. Like, maybe, like, if somebody could loan us their solar car, we could, like, go on a, you know, see how long it takes us to get to from Sydney to Melbourne with a solar car, you know, or something.
That sounds like a comedy of errors waiting to happen.
It does. I know. That's what makes it funny. Like, that's... what?
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe. That is an option.
You're telling me you wouldn't do it. If somebody loaned us, like, a solar car, you wouldn't do it. You sound hesitant.
I would definitely go check out that solar car. I'm not sure I'd ride from... Depends how long the ride... What's the normal ride from, like, Sydney to Melbourne? What's that... Drive
12 hours.
Oh my god. I'm not much of a road tripper either. I mean, so you said you're a road tripper, and I'm
absolutely.
So I'm sure we'll
gonna have to educate you.
Yeah, well, you know, sing some songs and talk. Mm. God, that'd be a long.
All I can think of is like the Top Gear when they went across America. You know, it was. Like...
I'm actually thinking more like Dumb and Dumber, where they're driving across America. Yeah. Just go, man. Just go.
In the car shape with big dog ears, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
If you have ideas, the World Solar Challenge is in October, so that's not going to happen.
Right.
So we need maybe anything that's on in when? April?
April, yeah, April. So
towards end of April.
Yeah, so that's like the end of your, it's like your fall, autumn, right?
Yes, autumn, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. I also probably will be, you know, going other places, New Zealand. If Dave can't go to Melbourne, maybe down to Melbourne, maybe up the Gold Coast. I'm not sure. It's only 3 weeks, so. But I'll be poking around different places. So if there's people throughout the Australasia region that want to send in suggestions, shoot me an email.
But what do you want to see? You've already said that you're not a touristy person. I've already tried to suggest
things
and location. And you go, yeah, Uluru. You could go up snorkeling at the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh,
you know, before it dies. I mean, you know, that's like a bucket list thing for many people.
Okay. Yeah, many people. I don't know. So like if I went to like New Zealand, maybe like hiking, stuff like that, you know, that's.
I thought you weren't a hiker. We can do that here.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah,
but
they
like, have better hiking over there, I think, you know.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, ours are different climates, like different. I will definitely have to take you canyoning.
Oh, God.
It'll be nice and chilly in April. It'll be wonderful.
Oh, God. No, I don't know about that. Maybe, maybe. Anyways, yes, you're many hijinks will happen. I'm not sure what I'm getting myself into, but it will be a good time, I'm sure. So, yeah.
Unbelievable.
So
if you have suggestions. He's coming out here and doesn't want to do anything. I think he just wants to sit in a lab somewhere. It's sad.
Maybe, yeah. Well, I hear you guys have beer and good people, and you know, so there's that.
Yep. All right. Fine.
What else should we? Anyway. What else is there to talk to you about that? I mean, like, I don't think there's much else there.
We just need suggestions
to come, right?
Of what we can do.
Yeah.
Like, if there's any like cool places that we should check out, and then we can, I don't know, either road trip to them or go to them, and I don't know. Whatever. Let us know.
Yep.
Because we're not creative enough to come up with any ideas. We're just like, nah. It's just lame, you know.
So, yeah, should be good. So what is your news? You've got news too.
My news is that I will have a new office.
Ooh. Which you've been talking about for a little while, but so you
I've
finally
been
found
about,
one. Yeah.
Yes, a second location. I am not relocating the lab. So the lab will stay the lab, but I have a new secondary office just down the road. It's within walking distance, and it's smaller than what I've got at the moment. But the idea is that it's a bit of a lifestyle change. I will get out of this windowless fishbowl stuck in the middle of the building that I've had for, God, how long have I been here now? Five and a half years maybe? I don't know.
Yes. No,
scary.
Less than that, right? I think, because
no,
the show's 6 years old, so you didn't get it that soon after. It was at least a year or two after.
Well, maybe it's 5 years this December, because I got it in December, so maybe. Anyway, it's been a long time. I've been stuck in this thing, and yes, this new one actually has a window and it has a balcony. Wow.
Ooh.
Novel. Woohoo! Stepping up in the world.
Yeah,
and,
man.
So the whole idea is that it's also closer to home as well. So technically went and encouraged me to walk there. And also, you know, it's near to my gym and, I can easily access the gym, and which is good for my rehab and just general getting back into the gym thing, which I've wanted to do. Because my previous gym was like too far. It was too much effort. You know, especially when you've got a family, like I leave here at 6, dash to the gym, and it just takes so much effort, and I'm not home until, you know, 7:15 or something, and it's, you know. So there's a lifestyle thing there, and hopefully a work priority slash, what's the word I'm looking for? Efficiency.
Balance.
Still not the word I'm looking for. No, no. I guess efficiency thing is like if I'm doing office type stuff, if I'm editing videos, I'm at the new office. That's
right,
where
focus.
I do.
You're looking for
focus.
Geographical focus. Yeah.
Yes. So separated everything. If I'm at the office, I do officey and business and video editing. And if I'm coming to the lab, I do lab stuff.
Yeah.
I shoot video or I'm doing lab.
I had that at my old job. I actually ended up retreating into the lab and like going in there full time. Because like the office was like an open plan. It was like super loud. And I had like my lab spot had a computer already. And I was just like, look,
that's understandable. Yep.
I just wanted to be in there the whole time. And I actually don't think it was a good idea though. I think there is a good reason to kind of have that like bench separation kind of thing, you know, like you're moving towards. I think there is that as long as you maintain it. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
It's okay to sit at a bench for 5 hours, but I think that if you sat at a desk or like at a computer next to a bench, it's not like you're not absorbing the goodness of the bench energy. You know what I mean? Like having that focal point.
Exactly.
Of,
you aren't. That's right. Like me here at the moment, I'm sitting at a desk and I'm staring at my benches and it's like, well, I just sit here in the corner and like, oh, no, I might as well have a window and a balcony and a gym that's close and, you know, not be distracted by.
Right. And we should definitely acknowledge that, you know, we are both very lucky to have, you know, that separation at all. I mean, a lot of people are working from, you know, that whatever space they have. That's totally
course.
Understandable.
Yep.
We don't mean to sound like that, but it's just that if you do have that, you know, it's able to, like, you can go there, have kind of a dedicated plan in mind, and get your stuff done instead of, I don't know. It's like that weird kind of psychological thing. It's like if it's always there in the background, it's like, you know, like having, like, specific bench time is good. Mm. I think that's,
oh,
and,
yes,
like, focus
yeah,
around
no,
it,
exactly.
too.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, you might think me sitting here in the lab is better because then it inspires me to go do something. Well, you know, like, I've been here for quite a few years now and, I tend to sort of just, I'm a lazy ass. I'll just sit on the forum, surf the internet, do whatever, you know, like, rather than actually get off my ass and do something. So,
well, we had talked about, we talked about that a long time ago because we were talking about data sheets at the bench. I remember because we were talking about like a tablet. Should you have a tablet for data sheets and stuff? But it is kind of like that draw of, you know, the siren song of the rest of the internet. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like
exactly.
You know, like, of course we can access the internet whenever we want to, pretty much from anywhere. So there is that, you know. But if it's for at least for me, having like a desktop there, it's more likely to be like, oh, checking a data sheet because I need to at the bench, and then what's on Twitter?
Then
it's just down the rabbit hole.
Whereas if you're on a pissy tablet with a small screen, it's like you're not going to be, you know, going, oh, I'll go surf the forum on my little piddly tablet, you know. It's just, no, when you've got three big screens in front of you and, you know, a lot like a real mouse and it's this, you know, you sort of get stuck in front of the computer. So... Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that's
the
good
idea.
I mean,
I will try it.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. Yeah, that's good.
And I've done this before. I used to edit at home. If you remember, many years ago, I used to finish my shoot at like 6 o'clock or something, or whatever time I had to go home. I grab my SD card and run out and head home, and edit there.
I only
that's
really
when
remember
my
that
lab
you
internet
would,
sucked.
I was gonna say you also forgot your card once in a while. You would be like, oh, I gotta run back to the lab. I forgot an SD card.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'd run off home and, I'd grab the wrong one or whatever.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Exactly. Yep. So,
sneaker net.
Anyway, and the, also, I have needed more room for like packing and shipping and stuff like that. So that was like one of my intentions was to get a secondary location for packing and shipping. Well, I found this awesome place that has the balcony and the whole thing. So I thought, aha, I'll just move my office out as well. So, but the good thing about it is that it will have room for other people. And this is something I've been discussing or thinking about lately is that I want to do more tours and interviews and, you know, stuff like that. Those types of videos.
Yeah, video stuff, right? Yeah.
From a content point of view. And I've been saying that for years and years, and I rarely get out there and get the enthusiasm, go out there and do them. Why? Is because it's a lot of work. Going to shoot on site is, I hate doing it. It's, you know, when you're the on-screen talent, you're the cameraman, you're the audio guy.
Don't call yourself the talent. Don't call yourself the talent.
I know.
How about the on-screen
loose
character?
Term. Yep. Right. I'm the character.
Yes.
And yes, I'm the cartoon character. And you've got to do everything. And then I've got to come back and edit the thing. And it's like, well, why don't I get... They're the type of video... And they're the type of videos too, that because they're not highly technical content usually, anyone can edit those, really. You know, it doesn't require someone with technical knowledge to edit those. So potentially I can hire someone to... not only shoot, but also edit outside videos outside the lab, you know. And I've got, I'm currently working with somebody on where I might have a new channel with new content, perhaps, or it might stay on my current channel, but there might be like a series of videos. So that'll take some time to get approvals. It needs approvals and various things, but I'm quite excited by that concept. And yeah, I think it wouldn't work unless I had somebody shoot and edit it. So I have potential location for people to do edits. And before people start saying, oh, you can do edit, why don't you just send the files to somebody and edit remotely? No, not going to work.
Not for 4K video or whatever you're doing these days.
Not for, I'm not even shooting 4K, and my a typical video is 10 gig worth of data, and people with a fiber optic to their house might say, oh, that's nothing, I can transfer that in half an hour. Yeah, well, I can't. So unfortunately, right, it's, that is, somebody physically has to be here. No, I can't mail them a hard drive or something like that. Like, it's just no.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So let's not talk about that again. Anyway, so there's, so I'm hoping that this new office will put me in a new mindset, not only to be more efficient in terms of video I produce, but potentially different types of videos as well. So...
cool. Yeah,
that's the plan. And if it doesn't come off, it doesn't come off.
Yeah. Well, but I'll be able to stare out a window. Great start.
No. And here's the other thing. Like when I first suggested to the wife that, you know, oh, I should get an office for packing and shipping, or for, you know, it started out as like a packing and shipping location. And she went, well, you know, and it might cost, you know, 20 grand a year or something to get it. And she's going, well, does it bring in 20 grand extra in income? And the answer is no, it doesn't. And that's the other aspect to expanding like this, is that there is no tangible return. There is no quantifiable return on an extra space, right? It's not like, oh, I've got this extra space, it's going to bring in X amount more income. It doesn't. Unfortunately, it just becomes an additional expense. So it's one of those...
It's a leap of faith, really.
It's a leap of faith that it's going to potentially not bring in more income as such, but, you know, give you more flexibility, do things differently, more efficiently, maybe produce more content. In that case, your channel sort of grows overall, perhaps, and, you know, it's...
yeah.
But if you ask me, is this guy... no, it's a drain on my... it's a drain on my cash flow. So, yeah. And I've got to sign up for 2 years, so it's a bit of a commitment. So, anyway,
cool, man. I think it's a good try. It's only a year, and it's a worthwhile experiment, right? No, it's only 2 years.
Well, it's only 2 years, right?
You know, it's Well, it's not my money.
exactly. But no,
I think,
like,
you'll be okay.
No, I am looking, and I am still looking for a bigger lab, but, you know, they're pretty rare at the moment in my park that I'm in, or the two parks that are close to me. So they're not happening.
You are in a small window of places to look, so.
Yeah. But if I move out, if I move not only the packing and shipping out of here and move my desk out as well, the lab actually becomes more than big enough, really, for doing stuff. So, I shouldn't. Yep. So I'm now under no sort of pressure to feel like I have to, you know, move the lab. And moving the lab is a pain in the ass. Nobody wants to move their lab, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I especially don't want to move my lab into a rented place, because then, oh, if they boot me out after the time, then I've got to move the lab again. No thanks. It's like, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, that's that is a mess.
Yep.
Well, cool, man.
Anyway.
You'll be great. Speaking of hardware labs, did you hear, have you seen this thing about, did you know Facebook has a hardware lab? I guess I shouldn't be surprised by this,
I shouldn't be surprised either, but I kind of, okay.
But it's like huge, like the, like, I didn't realize all the different things that they're doing.
Physically and huge, or just a huge number of projects and people?
22,000 square feet, I mean. I don't know what that is in square meters.
Hang on. Yeah. 22,000
in meters. What would it be? Meters squared? Square meters?
In meters.
But yeah, it's
2,000 square meters. Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right.
That's actually pretty easy conversion.
Okay, so it's roughly 10. Yeah, it's actually like a rough rule of thumb. It's like an order of magnitude.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. Oh, yes, of course, because there's like just over 9 square feet per square meter, because it's 3 foot by three foot, roughly. You know, order of magnitude. Yeah, all right.
Cool. Nice. Mm. But so pretty big, for sure. And not the biggest labs out there, but still, like, I didn't realize.
Do you have photos?
I do. It's on our subreddit, like everything else.
It's on inside. Yeah, there we go. I just haven't opened that tab yet. There we go.
Yeah. And so I don't know. Sometimes it can be, sometimes
this
is marketing stuff, but, I didn't realize the things that they were working on. So like OpenCellular, I knew they were working on, they own Oculus, but I don't think that's on site. But, there's a lot of, obviously the company I work for has a hardware lab now as well, much smaller, but you know, it's a nice one. And, I think it is interesting that you're seeing this more and more places. But why did I start talking about this in the first place? new lab. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing this at a lot of companies, so it's interesting. I think it's usually it's the stuff that gets talked about is like this one, they have like 9-axis Milturn lathe, right?
Yeah.
That's
serious
probably
kit.
Not getting used that often, right? You know, like, I think that it's better to have, for a lot of the projects that I see out there, it's usually better to have like a bunch of other mills or a bunch of nomads or a bunch of, you know, desktop type stuff, just in terms of volume of, like, that's the other thing too. Like, so remember we talked about my alma mater, Case, has a 50,000 square foot place. And that's what Larry Sears, who was on the show in the past as well, that's the one he was kind of running and stuff. You know, I always feel like it's better to have a lot of like a broad base of lots of accessible tools, because like the 9-axis tools or 5-axis tools, you need basically a professional running those kind of things.
Just to actually run it. Yeah. Your average engineer just can't go walk up and go, oh, yeah, I'll just, you know, mill something.
And it's not
out.
Worth it either, right? I mean, that's often.
Of course. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still kicking myself for not listening to the. I had a lot of good advice when I was talking about buying a mill back in the day, and
you didn't listen to them, and now you
didn't listen in the slightest. Yeah, you know?
Right.
But that's okay. I mean, that's how you learn, right? You know, there was discussions about, oh, well, you should try and get a part made first, or go and make one at a shop elsewhere first, and that kind of thing,
and get a feel for it.
I didn't get a feel for it, but just like you could do for the amount of, so like oftentimes the example given for like a 3D printer, right? So like for the cost of a TAS 6, which is a really nice 3D printer, you could, it's like $2,000, right?
Right.
Minimum. So how many parts could you print at Shapeways?
And yeah, it's like, exactly. Yep.
You could print probably, I don't know.
More than you'll ever print.
Probably, yeah, definitely. I mean, like super fancy prints are probably only $50 if you're doing like FDM, like plastic, right? So that's what, 40 prints? And I mean, like, are you going to do that even in a year? Maybe, like,
nah, probably
unless
not.
You're super iterating. So,
yep.
So yeah, it is.
So what
it
are you
is,
saying? You don't need your own lab anymore.
Am I saying that? I don't think I'm
kind
saying
of.
That. I guess maybe I am.
I think you are.
I mean, there are
a
lot of these shared spaces, too. Yeah, no, there are a lot of these shared spaces. Yeah. So if you have access, for sure, like in city people especially, if you have access, that's good. But yeah, I don't know.
Like, yeah, here, I mean, technically I could go to the local hackerspace, you know, but it's 25 minutes drive away.
It's tough because you're more spread out, too, right? And I think that
it's
different with a hackerspace versus like an actual lab space kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's different for electronics gear, too, right? But.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. And really, for electronics gear, you can kit yourself up. And you have to, I mean, because you've got to troubleshoot. I mean, you don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, you want to be able to troubleshoot right there and then in your own lab. You don't want to do, you know, it's unlike manufacturing. Manufacturing is different to troubleshooting and actually developing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't want to be using shared tools to troubleshoot. That would be, I think, that would be a pain
in
the ass.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what, like, I was thinking about that a little bit when you were talking about your new office space, too. Like, when you really think about it, like, one of the values of having your own space in the first place is being able to leave stuff as it is, right? And this is actually, this also kind of ties into the recording thing, too. Like, there is never an easier time than if you set up, like, a recording studio, like you might end up doing, right? That makes things so much easier. It's the same thing on a lab bench. If you have not even just a test that you're doing over time, but just having your setup ready to go, or in your case, right, you have a big enough, you have enough space, you're able to set up multiple setups. Like, man, you really can't beat that. I mean, it's expensive, of course. Again, we should acknowledge, but you know, like having.
I went to a talk at the Maker Faire on the weekend. Gavin Smith. He hasn't been on the show. No, he hasn't. Anyway, he develops lots of cool stuff, and he talked about this. He actually did a talk on developing how to make stuff, you know. And he was talking that he quoted Adam Savage, who said, drawers are where tools go to die. You know,
yes,
so
that is
like
so true, man.
You know, so if you've got all, you know, if you've got 1,000 drawers and everything, and you've got all these tools locked away in the drawer somewhere, and you don't use it for 6 months, and it's like you don't know where it is, and that kills your instant creativity. Like Gavin was saying, he got sick of. And like he does lots of welding and stuff like that, right? So he got sick of, his welder's away in a cupboard somewhere, and then he's got to get it out, and then he's got to find an extension cord, and it's gone somewhere else to, you know, he can't plug it in. And that just kills you. So he made a specific trolley rack thing with the welding gear on it, permanent cables, everything. And he says, if I need a weld, it's like 2 seconds, I wheel it out, switch it on, bam, I start going. Everything's just there, you know, ready to go. And otherwise it just kills your creative. He's one of the most creative guys I've seen in terms of the number of projects he's working on. I don't know where he gets the time to do it. It's because he's built these efficient systems to actually do it. So,
That's very true. I think I've noticed that personally from in terms of like recording setups, at least, like my being at home at my bench versus being on the road, you know, having to set up even cameras, like simple cameras, right? It's not like I'm doing anything crazy. But like having like regular setup cameras, everything ready to go, that makes things easier too, right? I mean, like
preaching to the converted. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course. right. But I mean, it goes the same for, you know, if your DMM's always moving around, well, I guess handhelds are different, but like, you know, if you were, I remember Keithley days, I was, you know, anytime someone would ask to borrow a piece of gear, it'd be like, look, I don't want to loan it to you. I mean, like, we would, but it would be like, you'd have to convince someone, because it's like you're starting to mess with someone's setup then, and it's like, oh, I need that Cald meter, you know, that Cald nice DMM or something, and it's walked away, and then now that's in someone else's setup, and it's like, it becomes like a currency almost.
That's the problem I have with my lab here. My lab is not, unfortunately, not set up as a working lab, like for day-to-day working. It's a pain in the ass for day-to-day working because I'm always borrowing stuff to move benches to put in video, like specific, you know, because like it's all about the shot, you know, like framing and everything else. So I can't just keep a bench and then, you know, like a workbench as you would in a typical lab and then use that for shooting video. It just produces crap quality, crap framed video. Yeah. right? It's poor. So I've got to move everything. I've got to, you know, if I want to shoot some solder in, I've got to go over and, you know, set up the cam over there. And like, I move the soldering iron to where there's better light and everything else. And, you know, like, and oscilloscopes. Yeah. Oh, I'm always moving oscilloscopes. You think I can find a probe the other day? I've got 20 probes probably in this lab. You think I could find a bloody oscilloscope probe?
Right, right. No, well, and this is kind of an argument against the shared workspace idea too, because with the shared workspace, then it's like end of the day, because it's shared, you got to clean everything up. And, you know, sometimes the value of leaving something overnight is, obviously you have to be more disciplined in general, but...
But you can leave that project there and then just pick it up at a moment's notice.
Right, right.
And like actually physically pick it up. You don't have to, it's in a box and I've stored it away for a couple of days. You just leave it on the bench, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like you have to, so I guess a best case scenario then for that would be to set up like not a true breadboard, but you know what I mean? Like have like a, if you're going to be testing, have a standard setup where, you know, you can like lock down board, you know, so, you know, have good board design. If you're, you know, if you're making boards, have mounting holes, mount it to a piece of wood, right? So it's always in the same, and then carry that piece of wood, you know, so that every day that setup's all in the same spot. Like that kind of stuff, you know, it does drive discipline, I suppose, it requires discipline, but it is annoying sometimes. So.
Gav in his talk said, if you think that you're going to come home from work, you know, you can be the most disciplined person, but if you think that you can come home from work and you're going to spend 4 hours on your project, you're kidding yourself. You know, like it doesn't work.
Like
things get in the way. Things get in the way. And it doesn't matter how disciplined you are. Well, maybe, you know, there's going to be some people out there, but I can do that. Well, yeah, okay. You're the exception to the rule.
Well, and it could be true, like, especially, like, I've had periods where it's like, I'm full bore 6 months, six months straight, and then, but then there's something happens or there's a break or whatever, you know, like, that's just,
it's different if you're
over
young,
time, right?
Yeah, and if you're young, single, working in a startup, you have zero commitments anywhere else in your life, then yes, you can do that, you know, but if you've got a family or whatnot, it just does not happen, so... Right.
It's tough, yeah. Well, I did want to talk about the shared workspace thing too, because one of the items I had on our list today was about, sorry to say it there, kiddos, but it is mid-August now, which means school's starting up again soon. Not for me and Dave. I mean, we don't have to.
My boys are already back at school, so I don't
know. Oh, really? Nice, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
right. I was thinking actually about the, you know, the people heading into college, and I was thinking it would be good for us to talk about, you know, what are some things to prepare for the new people kind of going to, you know, because we talk about people that are maybe not planning on doing the school route, but, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to electronics or doing EE or CE or, you know, CS or whatever, and what are some things that we would recommend to prepare yourself for... a world and a lifetime of nerdery like you and I have chosen.
Are you talking about preparing? Yeah, but there's different between preparing yourself for an EE course and...
Oh, well, no, not just a single course. I mean, like, here's what I was really thinking. I was thinking about, like, okay, so get on campus. What are some of the early things that I would tell younger me to do? One would be definitely seek out the lab. And then, you know, obviously that's an easy one, right? That's on your course syllabus. It would actually be figure out how do I work in the lab after hours on my own stuff, right? Because oftentimes that's a different thing. You know, you'd be able to get access. Can I get materials? Can I, you know, do I need
but
to be
I've,
trained on certain
often
pieces? Often
they won't allow that for new people. Like you've got to be like a, you know, in your senior years or something before.
Right, so that would be how do I get around that then? That's what I mean. Like,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because
who
there's
do I have
always
to sleep
ways around
with
that.
To get access to the lab.
Well, maybe there's better ways to say that, or actual better ways to do that. But so, like, okay, so I can give you case as an example. Yeah. So the main EE lab is like, you're not gonna probably get in there on just like a weekend or maybe you can get in on a weekend, but it's usually tied to courses, right? But then that new ThinkBox space. That is actually a secondary lab space that doesn't get used as much for electronics. And so like that would be one workaround, right? So it would be like figuring out that there even is a think box or whatever, you know, if your school has an equivalent, that kind of thing. And maybe that's an option. Another option might be, you know, you don't need to sleep with someone, but maybe you need to go talk to a professor and, you know, express your interest in, you know, working electronics and seeing if, you know, figure out who's in charge of the lab and just getting to know them. Or in my case, I actually worked as like, I was the guy that handed out soldering irons. So I had access to lab. I was just working there you know, as like a work study program. So that kind of thing too, right? Where you have access because you have a side job there, right? So that was the kind of things I was
thinking. It's more common these days for unis to have like, you know, maker spaces and stuff like that.
Yeah,
back in my day, that, you know, that didn't exist really.
Right. Right. It might have been someone's garage that was nice enough to share with other people, but probably not like a on-campus presence thing. I don't think
anybody
did that.
And for me, so. I've always had my own lab since I was a kid, so it didn't really matter,
right.
You know. So, wasn't that important.
That's true. Well, let's see, other things. So I think there is the people aspect, which Dave usually yells at me about, but I think it's very important. so maybe not just for lab access, I would say also if you're interested in, you know, clubs or certain types of research, that kind of thing. Like, I wish someone would have told me much earlier in my college career, like, you know, that you could go to a professor and be like, look, I'm interested in what you're doing. I want to help out. You know, there's no guarantee it'll work out, but, you know, you might be able to work on something part-time or...
free labor.
Exactly. You know? Right, right. They have grad students, but the grad students don't want to be there.
Right.
And so, I mean, like, having some enthusiasm just about that stuff, you know, so, like, I would say take a look just at the roster, you know, especially at the beginning. So, again, I'm just going off my experience here, but at the beginning of... the semester, especially like a lot of the younger professors who I might have been interested in talking to and hearing about the research, working with them on the research, they all get kind of slammed with the whole, like, they usually get stuck with advising. So, like, you have to make sure you're separate out of that. But if you ping them beforehand, or if you, you know, take them out to coffee or lunch or whatever, you know, like, there's other ways to do it other than looking like an advisee or, you know, a brown nosing student, right? Actually showing interest in what they're working on. And, you know, they all list their, everybody has websites for their professors, what they're researching, stuff like that. So if that is a route you want to go, that's definitely possible.
When I was a boy, there were no websites.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, old.
Yeah. And then what was it? You know, like on campus club things, right? So, I mean, again, there's a lot of shuffle at the beginning of your, you know, at the beginning of the year, stuff like that. But, you know, just kind of figuring out, like, another thing that I kind of regretted was just I learned about the some of like the solar car team stuff like that that was happening that I didn't even know about until way later, you know, late, right?
Yep.
You know, so like that's it depends on the school, obviously funding, you know, it's, but you know, if it doesn't work out at first or if your school doesn't have it, you know, you might be able to figure out other ways to start one.
Some schools have nothing, you know, they have bugger all. So.
But even just finding like finding a cohort of people that are interested in the same things, right? I mean, like, if we're being honest, right? Like, if I think about, again, me back then, I was not super into all this stuff, but, you know, like, I think about now, like, if now Chris could have talked to then Chris, I think that now Chris would have found a lot of people that were interested in it, you know what I mean? Like, there are people that are similarly interested, and, you know, if you're listening to the show, you're probably interested in electronics, or you're really bored. And
there are a few,
yeah,
who know nothing about it, but they actually listen. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
But I just think I think there are, I think there are just resources for that kind of stuff. Just kind of finding like-minded people that are interested, and you never know.
Never know you're lucky in the big city.
What's that?
You never know your luck in the big city.
Yeah, I guess not, yeah. What was the last thing? Oh, and if you are in school for it and you're not particularly interested outside of it, I mean, I think that there's benefits obvious to, you know, being interested in it more than just the school portion, but I would also say don't be afraid to go, you know, drink some beers and chill out once in a while, too. It's not like you have to be... It doesn't have to be your whole life, you know what I mean? Like... I know that there's like that what was that thing? Oh, it was shitty watercolor.
What?
It was so shitty watercolor is this guy on Reddit who basically takes comments and then he draws them in watercolors.
Oh, very, right.
Right. And he posted this thing on Twitter the other day, and it was a guy scolding his cat for, you know, drinking too much milk and being sick. He's like, haha, you don't know, and there's too much of a, you know, you're consuming too much of a good thing. And then the next frame is the guy in front of his computer, and it's he's rolling on the ground being like, I'm so lonely, because on the computer screen it's showing like talented Facebook people or something, talented, beautiful Facebook people, you know what I mean? And it's like, I feel a ton of stress from, you know, just scrolling through Twitter and seeing other people, seeing the projects people are doing, and be like, oh my God, I don't do anything. I'll never do that. You know, it's like, I guess the other piece would be like, you know, take it easy on yourself and just find your stuff that you like doing, because college or whatever you're doing is going to be stressful enough anyways. So,
right.
Just dishing
sage
out the advice here, Dave.
From yeah. Christopher J. Gemmell.
Yeah, right.
Next.
Yeah.
We've flogged that one to death. That's a dead horse. Hey, I went to an auction today.
Oh, something new.
Yeah, I get out a lot, don't I?
Yeah, so what were you bidding on?
Spectrum analyzer.
Oh, interesting.
There were two spectrum analyzers, Agilent, E4407Bs, for those playing along at home, like 26 gig. Like,
whoa,
serious,
damn.
You know, like, yeah. Yeah, I don't
Do
know what the original...
Do you actually have a need for that, or just...
Of course not.
Prospecting.
Of course not. They're up for auction, so I went, damn. I'll, if I can pick up those for a song, why not?
Would it be, so, like, anyway, a teardown thing, or like a...
Yeah, yeah, it'd be a teardown thing, maybe. Oh, okay. Yeah, or a repair thing if they'll fold it, or whatever, you know. Anyway...
Gotcha.
I get there. Their ex, like, was it Navy or something? Anyway, so their ex Defense Force stuff, as most of this stuff is, you know.
Yeah,
nobody
like
tosses
surplus.
Out stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
right. Especially two at a time.
Yeah, two at a time. And wow, were they crusty. You know, these are like... Like, yeah, like $20,000 spectrum analyzer, and one of them had obviously been dunked in salt water, and like the other had been like,
guys, don't dunk your spectrum analyzers in salt water. You don't need to do that.
and the other one was had been used in a salt water environment. It was all rusty, and it did sort of like power it up, and it did power up, and sort of the screen was all funny and all sorts of errors, and it was, it was a sad puppy. And they still went for $3,300 or something.
Damn.
Yeah, wow. These things, like, I actually met the guy who actually won them. He was like a ham. And
Yeah,
and he said, he's actually 9 weeks away from retirement, and it's his hobby, actually repairing this sort of stuff. Yeah, and he's got a similar one, so he wants these as parts units and things. So that's bloody expensive parts units.
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
in
but
fact,
I'm sure
actually,
that the good unit was probably goes for a lot more, right?
Well, the good in quote marks, it needs extensive repair, but it's probably like there's probably like rusted traces inside that are being eaten away by all the corrosion, and you know, like, oh no, I couldn't imagine. Like, I thought, okay, if they go for like a couple of $100, I'll pick them up just for like teardowns, because my income from
course.
The video would like pay for them, you know, maybe. And, you know, so I thought, oh, yeah, maybe they're worth a couple of $100. And the bidding started at $1,000. And it's like, nah, I'm out straight away. And, like,
so
and the only
ever...
two that were going, sorry, the only two that were going for it were this ham, was the old ham guy and one of the professional eBay gear sellers. So, they were just, anyway, the ham
one. Have you ever actually, done a repair on something that crusty? I mean, like,
Not that crusty. No, I would. No, I would. You wouldn't bother. Once you know salt water is contaminated, you're bored, then mm-hmm. it gets under the solder mask and then just starts eating away the copper.
Oh, good so, Lord, yeah.
So, you know, long term, no. Short term, you might be able to fix it. Long term, mm-hmm. if it's gotten under the solder mask, you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, and it's probably one of those things where you, even if you clean it up real nice, it could be like an error, like you don't see it, right? And it's just like intermittent type crap that...
Well, this happened to my Apple Apple Lisa computer, right? The old Lisa I had, if you've seen that video, I did a teardown on that. And I was hoping that that's repairable, right? Because it uses all old through-hole tech that, you know, you can easily repair this sort of stuff and you ensure you can get schematics for it. And then, nah, the battery leaked in that thing and the acid all over the main processor board was eaten. You could see all the tracks eaten away under the solder mask. And it was like, wow, if you had a couple hundred hours to spend it, you might be able to mod wire and repair and dig up every, like, hundreds of traces. But, nah, it was, like, too far gone. Yeah. So
that's too bad.
Yep.
Hmm.
No, once that rot starts, it's no good.
You had posted about the amateur radio that someone posted on the EEV blog forum, right, about their CCC presentation? I didn't get a chance to watch it. Did you watch it?
I have not watched the presentation, but I was I did poke my head in the forum discussion on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, what is it? The revival. I'm trying to find the tab here. It's
the death and rebirth of amateur radio. Yeah.
The death and rebirth of amateur radio. And it was a talk somebody gave Ryan Sayre, rebooting a hobby, how modern digital comms are, blah, blah. And he spoke at some electromagnetic field conference. No.
EMF?
I don't know.
Oh, that's EMF. Okay, EMF is actually a conference that just happened in a field in England.
Right, okay.
Yeah. It's a fun name. Electromagnetic field. Get it?
Yeah.
It's a field conference.
Get it.
Yeah.
Chuckle. Yes. All right. I have not watched the video, so apologies. But, it's like people are talking about on the forum, you know, how can you reboot ham radio and stuff? And I went, well, you know, like somebody pointed out that the communications aspect of ham radio is practically dead. You can't revive that. It's not like you can convince somebody
that, because we have the internet, you know, right?
we have that, right? We have the internet. Oh, you can talk to anyone around the world. It's like, no, you've got to find another angle. And one angle that immediately, sprung to mind, and was that in the US at least, I'm not sure about other countries, but all of these end of the world prepper type people, you know, these preppers, you know, you've got like TV shows with your preppers and,
I know what you mean, yeah.
But, yeah, those. Anyway, they've got, it's so popular. There's like millions of these preppers, you know, that are, you know, the government's, like the civilization's going to collapse and everything. I thought these were actually the perfect people to get involved in this sort of stuff. Like, if there's millions of people there that are really dedicated to this, like, why aren't they ham radio? Like, you think that, you know, in a crisis, that's one of the first things that's going to go down. The internet's going to go down, the phone system.
Yeah, but that's not a hobby. That would be like a functional type of thing, right? Where, like, I need to communicate.
It'd be a functional thing, but hey, at least get them on, you know, at least sign them up.
I mean, to be completely honest, if any kind of thing like that ever happened, it's not going to matter if you have a license or not. You know what I mean?
No, but the fact that you actually have a ham radio will, and you've got to teach these people, right?
I guess so.
You've got to teach these people.
Well,
I think
the security field, obviously, you know, we've had a lot of those people on this show, right? So like Mike Osman and Colin, and you know, like everybody doing stuff with the digital mode, stuff like that, right? I think I think that's driving a lot of interest as well. Just being able to view the spectrum, program the spectrum, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that's like, well, that is sort of transmitted as well, but it's mostly reception type stuff.
No way, man. It's both.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's just about removing. So I think the reason that works so well is that basically all these tools are removing the entire RF layer. You know what I mean? Like, it's not
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, and it's like abstracting out that whole thing. And so it just becomes a communication medium instead of like, you know, like, so at least from, you know, I have my technician license. I have not used it. I don't really plan to. I just did it for the test because I was interested in getting through that and getting a call sign. But I mean, like, there's a lot of gearheads too.
And your call sign is?
KD8RND.
R&D?
R&D, yeah. I always liked that.
So you could choose that? You chose
that? No, that was just random. Like, it was just random good luck. Like, seriously.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of gearheads, you know what I mean? Like, and for a lot of that stuff that I think that matter. I mean, it still matters, but, you know, people aren't necessarily, you know, like contesting and stuff like that. There's, you know, it's not quite as big. I shouldn't really speak about that because I don't really know. But I feel like a lot of stuff can still get done. A lot of interesting things can get done without having the best gear and these days because of these digital modes, stuff like that. I think that's really, if there's going to be anything, that's going to be it. That's what's going to...
Yeah, but digital mode's not magic. You've got to transmit at 5, 10, 50 watts, you know, like, you know, that can't just magically happen because you've hooked it up because you're sampling at a computer. You've got to have, you know,
right, but just like before, you can buy beefy transistors there to, instead of build it. Like, there's obviously people that are doing,
yeah,
like,
but
you know, low power
modes. I don't think many people are into ham radio are doing the digital thing. I stand to be corrected, but and maybe that's the problem, right?
Maybe. Like I said, I'm not part of it, so. Anyways, there is.
But you're a ham.
I think what we're getting at is there's a video.
Right, there is a video. Go watch it.
There is a video, right.
There is a forum thread. Go and put your 2 cents worth in how to resurrect.
That's what the forum's there for. Yep, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did bring up Osman and the HackRF, and there was an item that is damn impressive. So a guy built a homemade 30 megahertz to 6 gigahertz vector network analyzer on a PCB from Oshpark. He did all of the. I'm saying he. I don't know if it's he. Sorry, but basically, this entire build was done on an Oshpark board with simulated strip line stuff, and the software's built on HackRF software. That's a HackRF base, and there's tons of schematic stuff. Like, it's just like, it's nuts to me that people
insane.
Are building this stuff. Yeah,
that's
but
insane.
It's a nice layout and in KiCad, mind you. And it seems like it works up to 6 gigahertz, so that is damn impressive. So
very,
definitely worth checking out.
Yep. Who did that? Let's name him. Can we?
Henrik Forsten.
Heinrich.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes, and all the stuff. At the end, it says, "I'm not selling these, but you're interested, you make your own." We're looking at the design files, all hardware, firmware, and processing software is available on GitHub. So,
brilliant.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Really
brilliant.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yep.
There's a lot of work's gone into that. That is phenomenal.
Well, and you know, like that, so that's another enabling factor these days too, right? I mean, like, that makes a big difference, being able to have Oshpark boards simply, and, you know, and it's not just Oshpark, but, you know, obviously.
Oh, no, that's got nothing.
We're big fans of Oshpark, but like.
No, I'm not saying for this stuff.
I'm saying that in more in general, like these days of just the accessibility, you know, the era that we're in of accessibility of components and boards making and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's a good time, you know. So
crazy.
I don't actually, you know, like, so people like lament how hobbies have changed and how things like that. Like, most of the time, I'm like, eh. You know, like, if it's going to survive, it's going to survive. And if it doesn't, like, this probably doesn't mean to. It's not meant to, right? And
right.
I don't feel much.
It's going to survive. Like, it's always going to survive. But,
right,
you
it's,
know,
it's just
will
not
it
gonna
flourish
be as big,
and have a...
Right, yeah.
It's not going to have a... It may not have a rebirth like hobby electronics did. Hobby electronics had a rebirth through the Hacker Maker movement. Absolutely no doubt about it. It was a massive rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was dead. And then all of a sudden, people doing electronics again. Unbelievable. You know?
Mm-hmm. And that's why we have Dave.
It's possible. It is possible.
Yeah,
anyway, ask me about Maker Faire.
Oh, yeah. How was Maker Faire? So I saw some tweets. Obviously, you said you talked to... I've already forgotten his name. Or you saw someone talk.
Mick? Mike? No? Who? What?
You were talking about a talk that you saw. I forget what his name was.
Oh, already. Yes. Gav. Yes.
That's right. Yes. So what happened there? What else did you see? Anything good?
No, unfortunately, it was very similar to last year. It was a bit smaller than last year.
Why am I asking you about this, then?
I know. Well, because it happened. Hey, and, you know. Anyway, it was Maker Faire. Yeah, it was a little bit, probably a bit smaller. There were a few ones that were there last year and weren't there this year. I'm not sure why. But granted, there were a few new ones. There was some interesting stuff. And thanks to everyone who came up and said hi. There was an Amp Hour t-shirt.
Nice. Just one? Oh.
Yes. Yeah, I tweeted. Well, it'll be in the video. I've got an Amp Hour t-shirt in the video.
Oh, cool.
And
nice.
Yes. And people come up and give me stuff to tear down and show me stuff. And yeah, it's fun.
That's great, man.
For me, the Maker Faire here is more about meeting people than it is seeing stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, there's 5 3D printer stands, you know, like...
I think that's actually, well, at least for me as well, I totally agree. I'm same thing. Like, I don't really see much new stuff, but the reason to go is because there's so many people there that are kind of similar-minded, right? That kind of...
Exactly. And it's a catch-up. You know, it's my yearly catch-up with everyone.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I don't go to, you know, I don't go visit
Dave
them.
Dave comes out of his hidey hole. Yeah.
Exactly. Once a year.
Right. He sees
once
a shadow.
Once a year, I'm allowed out.
Goes back to the lab for 6 more weeks of winter.
Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, cool. So it's good. Yeah, it's, you know, and meeting old and new people, and some of the stuff people are working on though is phenomenal, you know.
Yeah, what kind of stuff?
It's just like,
because that's another thing. I kind of troll through, you know, like Hackaday.io, stuff like that, or Twitter, or, you know, just seeing what, you know, I kind of talked about that anxiousness about seeing all the cool stuff people are working on, right? It is kind of anxiety inducing sometimes of like, oh, I'm not doing enough stuff, but at the same time it's like, damn, like I love to see it still, you know. So,
well, I hate to say it, but for me it's not the electronics. I don't see any interesting electronics in there, maybe because, well, electronics is just it, you know, I like nothing surprises me much. Nothing surprises. That's the field I'm in, so nothing really surprises me that somebody's working on some electronics project. It's always the other stuff that people are working on. For example, this is a coincidence. Gav, who did that talk, he said he's working on a ball bearing particle accelerator, right? And then, like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Anyway, half an hour later, I had a viewer come up to me and say, "Hey, I'm having this Kickstarter in soon, and I want you to, you know, I want to send this into the mailbag. It's a ball bearing particle accelerator," and it's like awesome.
Is that like how what's his name, Leipzig and Newton? The, you know, like how the calculus was basically invented by two people at the same time. Is it Leipzig?
Oh, right, yeah, Leibniz and Newton.
Leibniz,
yep.
That's it. Yeah,
thank Leibniz, you. I think.
Yeah, yep. I think you're right. Yeah.
And anyway, so it's just sheer coincidence both of them were working on that. And it's the other, it's for me, the interesting stuff is the non-electronics stuff. Like I met this guy who was building, whose plans to build in the middle of Australia somewhere, I don't know, or the middle of our state somewhere, a Stonehenge. Like a
really,
like a, like a, well, kind of like a you know, a solstice thing, and he like brought in this panoramic photo that he's done of the location, and he's like spent a year researching the heights of the rocks from the certain location, and for, you know, the summer solstice, the winter solstice, and so they all got to line up, and he's going to, and he's 3D printing these rocks that he wants to build, and he's going to build, you know, these 15 meter high rocks, and he's looking, you know, and this,
I'm
thing's
sorry,
gonna,
you mentioned Stonehenge, and I can't stop thinking about this is Spinal Tap, where they built Stonehenge, but it's only 18 inches tall.
Right. No, this is like 37 ton rocks, like,
oh,
you
know, I know,
it's
I'm sure
interesting
that's
shit like
fantastic.
This, you know?
Just, I can't stop thinking about this is Spinal Tap. That movie's amazing. Anyways,
maybe we can get a screen capture of that and we can include it as the photo for today's episode. Anyway, it was like real interesting shit like that. My mate
really
is
cool.
doing biohacking stuff, you know, really fascinating.
See,
stuff.
Okay, so I think
so
I think the problem and the problem I always have, and it's always the wrong thing to say, and it's why. The why is always the wrong question in those kind of situations. Like, why are you building Stonehenge? Exactly.
It's
you don't
cool.
ask why. You just say, awesome.
I know. You just say, awesome, and I want to go see it. You know, it's like...
I still, in my mind, sometimes I say why, but, it, you know, the answer is,
right.
it doesn't matter, Chris. It's not up to you. You know, like, right. because they're doing yep. cooler things than you. So...
so, oh, yeah, man. Anyway, so the takeaway is I always come away from Maker Faire... being mm-hmm. amazed and, you know, surprised by the non-electronics stuff.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
It's,
yeah.
it's all the other, the interesting physical things that people are building and stuff. So,
yeah. Yep. Yeah, like machinist stuff
That's
always does
cool
that for me
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah,
like,
the machinist always
you know,
does
like,
it for me, you know.
Yeah.
Yep, a highly engineered machine.
I saw, it was 2 years ago, I think, but the one where they built a blown-in injection mold, wax mold machine. It was made with like it was made out of a reclaimed water fountain cooler to actually cool the mold
right.
and stuff. It was
Very
like
cool.
it was fantastic,
yeah.
Yep. that kind of stuff. Like, but yeah, there's always something like that, and it's great because you know, like you said, I mean, it kind of re-inspires. You know, like it kind of makes you think about new things. So being around people like that, there's a lot of good vibes there. So that's good.
Yep. Nah, it's awesome.
What about
and. Well, and the thing is, two of the makerspaces here in Sydney, they really focus on non-electronics stuff, you know, textiles and woodworking and all that, you know, like they really focus on non-tech type stuff. So
I was talking to someone who was a costumer, and I was just talking about, you know, I used to know how to actually use a sewing machine, but I actually haven't done it in a long
right.
time. But, like, that is such a, I mean, like, in terms of, like, you know, I'm not huge into wearables, but, like, that is such an important skill in general just to be able to, like, you know, understanding
sure.
how contours work and clothing, stuff like that. It's just, it's
Absolutely.
Really interesting, I think.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good skills to have. I think it's often what it comes down to, whenever I'm talking to someone that, you know, they talk about, oh, I want to get into electronics, usually that's a conversation, but really anything, right? I mean... the most important thing in any new field that you go into is just having a project that's even close, right? Just anything,
right.
like, what do you want to build, right? It doesn't matter, like, just, you know, have one thing in mind. So, like, if you want to do textiles, if you want to do, you know, like have a coat that you want to make, right? And just have that one focal point. Otherwise, because if you just say, like, I have people that talk to me about KiCad, right? And they're like, well,
right.
I just want to learn KiCad. I'm like, no. No,
no,
you don't want to do
no,
that.
No, no.
You need
that's
thing.
That's boring. No, you need a thing to make.
You need a thing to board to build. And then
yeah,
it's like you'll learn
totally.
Everything you need around that, but like have that goal in mind of the thing or else you'll never, you know, because no one wants to watch boring ass videos of me talking about KiCad unless you're stuck and then it makes sense, right? So,
oh,
yeah.
This is the other thing that came out of Gav's talk. He wouldn't let me film it because it wasn't polished enough. So anyway,
come on, Gav. Seriously, it's fine. Anyways,
anyway,
cool.
the
it's,
other
it sounds like a good talk from the outside. I got to say, so
it was good. How to make stuff, you know, like it was just fairly generic like that, and different materials and stuff like that he's working on. Like, for example, there was this one thing where he took a sheet of titanium, right, and he figured out that you can corrode titanium at different voltages, and depending on the voltage, it's a different color corrosion. So he actually did this color map. He actually mapped voltage versus color for titanium corrosion, and now he wants to, you know, do like a multi-axis machine to actually paint corrosion onto titanium. You know,
that's
like
a cool
it's
idea.
Just
yeah.
brilliant stuff like that. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an aside. He was saying that you've got to set yourself little goals during your project as well. If you just have one big goal at the end, I'm going to produce a software-defined radio. You know, that guy who was it? Heinrich, who made the, you know, the VNA.
Right. Right, you know, don't start with that.
No, but you could. You can start with that with the goal. But if you just try and do everything and then it just suddenly either pops out at the end and works or doesn't work, then there's no satisfaction in the middle. You've got to go work on this block, get this circuit block, get that bit, have a goal for that block. That block must work, and then boom.
Well, and actually that's another good point too, is because it's like sometimes the right answer is to not want to build everything, you know, use a module and, you know, stick a couple modules together and pick one thing that you really want to learn about at a time. Right? Yep. Yes, that's a good point.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. But have little goals along the way, otherwise you lose enthusiasm and the project will never get finished, which is totally true.
Yeah, man, momentum. That's all that matters usually. It's like that is the... back to the bench, right? And that's where it comes from. So, like, you know, having that momentum because your stuff's all set up and you just walk back in and do it. So,
what do our listeners get out of Make Affairs and other shows? Tell us. Is it the non-tech stuff? Is it the electronics that really inspires you, or is it the other stuff? For me, it's the other stuff, because I know I can do the hardware, you know, like I know I can do the electronic side of things. It's like, you know, it doesn't necessarily inspire me a huge amount. But people doing interesting, different stuff.
Right. I mean, for me, it's usually like, it's the connections that later in the year when I'm like, oh man, how do I do this? Then I can call someone up or, you know, send them a message or something. That, man, that is, that's killer, right? I mean, that's the same thing of like when you're stuck in the moment, you don't know what to do. You can go on a forum, but you're not always going to get an answer, right? But if you know someone who's already doing that thing, it's like, man, that's gold, you know.
That's it.
I think that's it for us, huh? Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, we're done.
If you've got suggestions on what Chris and Dave should be doing in Australia in April of 2017, or if you want to hang out in April of 2017. Yeah, man, it's a ways out.
2017.
Yeah.
I can remember thinking, oh, what it'll be like in the year 2000 when the millennium comes around. Oh, man. It was like, seriously, that was a long way off, right? You know,
it was,
like 2000, like in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, it was like, oh, gee, you know, 2000, the millennium, you know.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, 2017. Wow.
Time barrels on, you know.
Unbelievable. Anyway. The next Amp Hour, pretty sure won't be done from my new office, but probably maybe the one after that might.
Okay. Cool.
So we'll see.
All right, man.
All right.
Talk to you then.
Catch you next time.
Bye.